Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of Schmursday, January 24th, 2022. Happy birthday to my sister, Christina. On the show today, news, listener questions, and in our main segment, Jim continues the story of Disney's first attempt at a Marvel-themed attraction, the Iron Man Experience at Hong Kong Disneyland. Let's get started by bringing in the man who reminds you that when your boss says, go big or go home, they're giving you the option to go home. It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
I think you and I have both been working from home for decades now, right?
Yeah, it's been for me 10 years, yeah.
First of all, the commute is a bear. But more to the point, when you get frustrated, when you get angry, it's like, that's it, I'm going home. It's like, well, okay.
I'm going upstairs.
There we go. I'll be here in the broom closet stewing.
Yeah, for the longest time, it was I would work 7 days a week. I mean, until like the last couple of months, I was working every day just because it's, you know, I work at home and I would just sit down in front of the computer. And even if it's just, you know, checking email or doing something. But lately it's been like, you know what? Instead of going downstairs and flipping on the computer because I'm bored, I'm going to go out for a walk. It's a better idea.
Very wise.
Yeah.
The downside here is, especially in January with our driveway iced over, I step up to take a walk and then it's a slip and slide out into the road.
We each have our winter sports, Jim. I look forward to seeing you at the Beijing Olympics for that.
There we go. Look for me in the luge. Okay.
All right, Jim, let's do a quick shout out to subscribers over at disneydish.bandcamp.com. Thanks to new subscribers Thomas T. Forever, Carolina Girl, and Shelly W64, and the longtime subscribers Vernon Rollins, Melissa Iannata, and our old friend Gray Hazer from monorailnews.com. Jim, these are the skilled astromechanic cast members who fix the Millennium Falcon each time guests bring it back damaged while on Smuggler's Run. And I know you're thinking, Jim, why does Disney pay for the repairs when Hondo Inaka is the one running the operation? But apparently, damaging the Falcon triggers a rip-some-arms-off response in Wookiees, and Disney's market research shows that guests without arms can't carry gift bags. True story.
Boy, you actually picked a great week to do this. Have you been watching Book of Boba Fett?
I've not. No, I'm actually going back through the original Star Wars movies to prep for March 1st and the Galactic Star Cruiser. But what's up with Boba Fett? I've heard it's good.
It's not bad, but literally this week's episode, we finally got a Wookiee ripping off somebody's arm.
it's the origin story of the phrase?
I assume. So, you know, how timely of you to zero in on this issue.
Speaking of Disney films, I finally saw Encanto.
Oh, and?
Loved it. Loved it. Thought it was fantastic. Christy made dinner one night this week, so I drove over to have it and watched it with Gigi, her daughter. It was great. I mean, the songs are great. The color, the art in it is just amazing.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the songs. That what's interesting is we don't talk about Bruno. Yeah. Is literally, I think, the number one song of the country right now. And the funny is there's this great story about writing the songs for the film, and they were trying to settle on the name for the mysterious uncle, and Lynn sort of slammed his foot down. It's like, no, it has to be Bruno, because then we can go, no, no, no. You know, it's just like musically. He can't. Yeah. We don't talk about Uncle Phil. Ill, ill, ill. No, it doesn't work.
That's actually a great point. You picked the name to make the rhyme scheme work.
There we go.
See, this is why they're professional songwriters. They know those tricks.
This is true.
All right, Jim, let's do the news. Folks, the Disney Dish News is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Disney Dish Podcast. For a worry-free travel experience every time, book online at storybookdestinations.com. All right, Jim, Disney's saying that Woody's Roundup Barbecue, which was first announced in 2019, will open sometime in 2022. I think we heard summer. Is that what you heard?
They're being a little slippy-slidey. I mean, I think you're the one who explains when they say summer, that could be June, that could be September.
Yeah, summer is basically May through, late September for Disney, yeah. Seasons are fluid. What have you been in this time, Jim?
I know they want the restaurant open. The pushback from the folks who are actually going to operate the restaurant, the effect of, look, are we opening with, quote-unquote, COVID capacity?
Oh, right.
Are we going to open with really for real capacity? And the pushback from management is like, nobody knows.
Nobody knows. The answer is yes and no simultaneously.
Yeah.
Schrodinger's restaurant.
But we clearly need this. The poor lunchbox facility.
Yeah.
It's really been hammered since this land opened to the park, and they could use the relief. And
yeah. They're working on space around lunchbox now, mm-hmm. having to either add or improve the seating situation there, which frankly it lacks. But I think in general, I mean, the studios needs another sit down restaurant. So this will be good. Yeah.
This will be great. But also making the folks at operations crazy. It's like, you couldn't wait to do the upgrade of the seating of Lunchbox till after the barbecue place opens. Like, oh, no.
Yeah, it must be urgent and immediate.
Oh, God.
All right. Also, we're getting a new gift shop, Jesse's Trading Post over in Toy Story Land. So, Jim, a proper store in Toy Story Land.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time. Didn't they have the equivalent, though, back when it was Pixar Place, a little kind of walk-in store next to the Woody and Buzz meet and greet?
Yeah, they did over in that area right now that was briefly also character greetings.
There we go.
Yeah, they did over there. But that didn't last very long. And that was sort of, I mean, anything at a dead end in a theme park is not going to get the kind of traffic that Disney's looking for.
So, not at all. So.
All right, Jim, over at Epcot, have you seen the new nighttime show program that Spaceship Earth got for Festival of the Arts with Kermit and the Muppets singing Rainbow Connection?
Was it your sister who posted the video who mentioned that it's okay to tear up when Animal comes into the
Exactly. You know, I like the song. I like the effects. I'm not convinced it belongs in Epcot. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the Muppets. I like the song a lot. It's something about it being in Epcot that I'm thinking, like, that doesn't feel right. Which is weird because, like, we were just talking about Encanto. You know, I watched that film. I'm like, okay, we'll put Columbia in World Showcase and we'll do this and I'll be okay with it. Right. Mm-hmm. But Muppets in Epcot on Spaceship Earth just didn't give me the same feeling. And again, I like all the individual components, but it's like putting them all together. Not my thing. I don't know.
This is the modern Disney company. You know, it's just sort of you look for places to shoe in IP everywhere. And there was one version of the redo of Journey into Imagination. It was built around the characters from Pixar's Inside Out. Mm-hmm. And there was one version that was written around the Muppets. Neither of them has gone forward. But this is the feel with especially when it comes to Future World. It's like, we need more characters in here. And we need to figure out logical ways to put them in, or maybe not so logical ways, just get them in there. So
here's a wall, here's your fistful of spaghetti, go
there. Yeah. You go. All right. There we go. That to me is one of the most fascinating things about Festival of the Arts. When you walk around like World Showcase, there's Robin Hood painted on a wall, or the characters from Luca, you know, that are now part of a mural.
Yeah.
You know, and people do respond to this stuff. I mean, you know, just if you know, remember, this is the modern Disney company. They gauge what's being said on social media, and it's like, ooh, that got a response. Let's create another giant purple wall in the Magic Kingdom.
Fair. All right. Also, Jim, we have some new restaurant openings coming up. Flying Fish at Boardwalk reopens January 27th. So that's what, Thursday? That's great. Turf Club over at Saratoga Springs reopens February 3rd. And then Jico at Animal Kingdom Lodge reopens February 17th. So Flying Fish and Jico were fairly highly rated restaurants. Jico's perennially in the top five of all Walt Disney World restaurants. So it'll be good to see that open. Flying Fish also has tons and tons of fans. We give people over at the Boardwalk and in the Epcot Resort area another option there. Turf Club, not as highly rated, but Saratoga Springs definitely needs dining options on site for those people who don't want to go over to Disney Springs.
That's it, exactly. It really is kind of pleasing because these three can be reopened means that cast members are returning to the park. You know, what does it lend? Nature is healing.
Nature's healing, exactly. Yeah. I think part of this too is Disney's starting to get more staff back from the Omicron virus that's been affecting them. I heard like over the last month, like especially like middle of December to late December, a ton of cast members were out sick. But now they're starting to, those numbers are dropping pretty quickly. So that's good.
Good to hear.
All right, Jim, we haven't talked about Universal Orlando in a while, especially rumors around what's going on with new park attractions and then Epic Universe. You have anything interesting?
Rather than start with rumors, we finally got Shrek 4D shut down and Universal its hand, what, every next morning by putting up construction fences around that production central show building, which changes opinion. So we are definitely getting our Illuminations Miniland in front of that theme park. I think you were more intrigued by what's supposedly happening at the stunt show.
Yeah, so the Fear Factor Lifestyle Show is closing. Now, I've heard a couple of options for what's going in place there. What have you heard?
Almost since the day that Diagon Alley opened, there has been discussion about expanding the footprint for that side of the park. And in fact, I've been told by veteran Universal Creative members that you're going to put it back there. And it's like, well, why don't you take a look at the front of the building and you tell me? And it's like, well, the night bus. They've been looking to add another ride experience. I guess they had been talking simulator, ride experience that are similar to Star Tours, but you heard something differently.
I've heard they're looking at virtual reality. I'm not sure whether it's headsets or something else, but there are a couple of options with this. But the Knights Bus virtual reality ride makes complete sense, right? Because, I mean, that's a no-brainer there. I'm not sure whether it's headsets, glasses, or whatever, but if you look at what companies like Oculus or Facebook are doing with VR, or what Apple is projected to do with virtual reality glasses in 2023, I think Universal is looking at this and saying the wearable technology is now small enough that it's not going to be super intrusive for guests to put it on and get it configured. So I think they're looking like, you know, if Apple comes out with their device in 2023, by 2025, we'll be on Gen 2 or 3 of that hardware. And we can do a lot with that. I've also heard that maybe it's that the Potter VR ride doesn't stay in the existing parks and it moves to Epic Universe, but I'm not sure about that.
There's a lot actually depending on what happens later this year with the Secrets of Dumbledore. I want to say our party BioReconstruction has been doing flyovers. Likewise, Alicia Stella has been doing some stellar work on top of the permits and all that. So construction has gone vertical over there. In the end, you want to be placing the right bet on the right IP. So,
right.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So we should know more in a few months on that, right?
We should.
My understanding is that the decision about Potter is supposed to be made the week that we're recording this. So that's the week of the 17th. I mean, I like to keep my information up to date, Jim. So like sometime within the next 36 hours, that decision will be made.
Oh, there we go. All right. You know.
I don't have a direct line into the conference room where the discussion is happening, but, you know, someone's standing outside.
Okay. There we go. One final thing, though, that when you were mentioning, you know, where they are with the VR goggles and that sort of thing, what's the smart money on what the Potter goggles will be called? Didn't we, at one point on A Forbidden Journey, we had to wear our Quidditch goggles?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why would we need to put our glasses on the bus? These are the sneeze guard. Put those on,
please. I don't know. We'll have to come up with something, though. I'm sure they'll figure something out. Yeah.
There we go.
Also, Jim, have you and I talked about the survey that Universal sent out asking about Genie Plus-like services for Universal Express Pass?
No, but which other park in the country just announced they were doing something Lightning Lane-like?
It was a regional park. Kennywood? Yeah, Kenny Rogers, the Kenny Rogers Park? Yeah.
There we go. Love the chicken. I really don't like this trend, but at the same time, somebody was pointing out that in a weird sort of way, this is Disney eating its own tail. I mean, we have to go back a few decades. But it's, you want to get on that ride, pull a battery.
I mean, this is what happens when there's a small number of companies that that dominate the market. Basically, one of them adopts something, and then the rest of them think they have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, by the way, Jim, I forgot to mention that Universal survey that asked about Genie Plus like options that had that disclaimer that said, you know, you're not supposed to talk about this on social media. So Universal, that's on me. It's my bad right there. That's me. My bad, dog. Okay. My bad. All right. Speaking of surveys, Jim, let's go over a couple that some of our listeners have sent in. Julia sent in a Disney survey. And Jim, if you look at the questions on the survey that Julia sent in, I will bet dollars to donuts that Disney's internal name for this survey is, "Oh my God, what have we done now?" Because, Jim, let me give you some of the questions. Right. The first one is, please give us details around your upcoming vacation. It's, what transportation mode are you using to get to Central Florida? How are you getting from the airport to your Walt Disney World Resort accommodations? And are you spending all of your nights in Central Florida? Are you spending all of them in Walt Disney World? Or are you staying somewhere else? And by the way, how many people are bringing with you on this? All right, so here's the interesting thing. And then later on, it asks you how committed you are to taking your next Disney trip. And if you answer anything other than, "I am fully committed," Here's the question you get, and I want our listeners to think about this. Which of the following, if any, need to happen for you to be fully committed to your Walt Disney World reservation? Securing time off from work, school, or activities. Walt Disney World theme park offerings need to be more like they were before COVID-19. I've booked multiple trips and I'm going to see closer to our travel dates which one I'm going to take. COVID case counts in my home area need to be relatively low. I need to decide if the cost of Genie Plus and Lightning Lane is worth it. I need a better understanding of what Genie Plus and Lightning Lane is and how it works. I need a special deal or promotion. I need COVID case counts in Central Florida to be relatively low. Oh my God, if they should never go into a Publix, Julia, never go into a Publix. I or my travel party need to be sure we feel comfortable traveling at that time. I need to decide if the cost of the trip is worth it. And I need vaccines or boosters available for members of my travel party. So Jim, it's the ones that I think are interesting is we need to do more stuff like we were doing before COVID. I need to decide if the cost of Genie Plus and Lightning Lane is worth it. I don't understand Genie Plus. I need a deal. COVID cases need to go down in Central Florida. And everything's so expensive, I'm really not sure it's worth it. Woof! Those are some answers, Jim.
Oh, boy. Wow.
You know what they didn't have here, though, is you need to build more new rides, which I would have probably added.
Yeah, I get it. Oh, my God.
Is it, Jim, okay. It's like they're saying, which of the questionable decisions we've made lately are most likely to affect whether you're going to give us money?
Oh, my God. Wow. It's a notion of each of those are sizable problem.
Yeah.
Please help us decide which of the forest fires
exactly. We should. We are buried in multiple holes. Which of the holes should we fill first?
We're
buried in holes of our own making. Which hole should we stop digging first? So the next one, Jim, the next question was, Julia's staying on site. The question was, what was your mindset when choosing accommodations for your upcoming trip? Please use the slider to indicate on a scale from 0 to 10. How much you agree or disagree with the statement. So the zero scale is, look, my hotel is just a place to sleep. I only value practical considerations, such as location, room size, configuration, and cleanliness. Now a 10 would be, accommodations are an extremely important part of the vacation experience. In addition to practical considerations, I want to be immersed in a unique environment that allows me to escape the everyday. And Julia, to her credit, answered that. So she went all the way to that. That has to be unique. And I think when you're in some of the modern Disney hotel rooms or the DVC resort rooms, there's a decent chance that absent some accent decor pieces, what you're seeing in that room could be at any other Disney resort, right? The inside of the Riviera could conceivably be, with a few minor artwork changes, the inside of the Grand Floridian or the Beach Club or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But the Wilderness Lodge is the Wilderness Lodge and the Animal Kingdom Lodge is the Animal Kingdom Lodge, and no one would ever confuse those two with any other Disney resort, right?
Granted. Absolutely granted. Yeah.
The next question, the last one that I want to mention, this one is, which of the following items were very influential in your decision to stay at a Disney-owned resort hotel? So again, listeners, as I go through these little check boxes, tell me whether you would check that box. Number one, hotel amenities, on-site dining, shopping options, swimming pool, and so on. Early theme park entry, which Julia checked. Extended evening theme park hours, which Julia did not check. Discounted magic bands. My preferred resort wasn't available. I liked the extended window for making dining reservations. I enjoy the complimentary transportation to and from the Walt Disney World theme parks and other popular destinations throughout the Walt Disney World Resort. The proximity to theme parks is important. Guest service standards, discount package or offer, complimentary standard parking at the Walt Disney World theme parks and water parks. I get to be the first to purchase and schedule Lightning Lane attractions. Julie did not check that. The Disney bubble, total immersion in the magic of Disney throughout my vacation. The resort feel or theming, unique and different offerings like character experiences and fireworks viewing, resort cleanliness standards, room configuration. I can use DVC points, or none of these were very influential. So that's super interesting, because things like Disney's trying to figure out whether early theme park entry or extended evening theme park hours are important, but then they're also trying to figure out what the other big benefits are.
I am fascinated, especially on the heels of Disney Express going away, of them using the term the Disney bubble.
Right.
Have we ever seen that bubble up in a survey?
No, before? I think that's the first time we've ever seen Disney use the phrase the Disney bubble.
How did this suddenly enter the corporate lexicon? It's because Disney just went away, and it's like, yeah, they're no longer inside of the bubble. They're no longer feeling happy about us. You know,
I don't know,
taking that away. So wow.
But this will tell them what the important amenities are. I wonder if this will change their marketing to talk about different things like early theme park entry.
Speaking of which, again, we talked on the last show about the ad campaign for the Walt Disney World Resort teeing off for the 50th anniversary. The juxtaposition between what's being said and what's being showed on screen is
right.
Kind of one of those things that kind of nails home that Disney's not on their A game anymore. It was something to the effect of wonderful immersive environments, you know, and at that moment, you know, the shot that comes up of a child standing inside of a Disney store.
Yeah.
You know, and sort of like, oh.
Our stores are the most immersive environments you can spend money in.
There we go.
We did hear from a couple of listeners in different parts of the country. I remember one was from Iowa who said Disney's still running the 50th anniversary commercials in that particular market. So I wonder if they've just taken it away from bigger markets.
I wonder as well. But when you're talking about the Walt Disney Company, yes, think nationally, but also think, you know, how important the individual regional markets are.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Jim, we've got a couple of listener questions I want to go through real quick. Here's one from Casey, who says, in last week's show, someone wrote in about the park reservation requirements going away so that annual pass holders would not have to make reservations. I'm okay with making reservations, but we normally do 7 or 8 days in the park for our big yearly trip. With the 5-day limit, having to buy 3 extra days so that we've confirmed reservations gets expensive quickly. Have you heard anything about the 5-day limit being removed or increased for annual pass holders? So, Jim, I've not heard anything, but it seems like a reasonable request, right? You go from like 5 to 7 days?
And again, I'm hoping someone in guest relations is listening in. Let me write this down.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just fine-tune it for supposedly your very best customers.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're an AP holder and you're staying on site, you should be able to make those reservations. Yeah, that makes complete sense. So, all right, Casey, we hope someone from Disney's listening. I mean, people from Disney listen all the time, but hopefully someone that can make some changes here.
There we go.
All right, here's a letter from Andrew, who says, I'm a big fan of the show and I look forward to listening every Monday. My family and I will be making a trip to Disneyland in May, and I've been looking at dining reservations in the park. I'm concerned because even when I look first thing in the morning, places like Blue Bayou, Oga's Cantina, and other premium restaurants are already completely booked for the newest available day. Do you have any suggestions for how to get dining reservations other than waking up early and trying to book? So, Andrew, a couple of options. Number one, I think definitely you should wake up early and try and book. But also try and book in the day before your reservation, because typically people will try and cancel to avoid penalties on those. So like the day before your trip, you can also look for reservations. That's also an option. Also, I would probably look at like the 30-day mark, which is when I believe final payments are due for trips then. I would check that because people would cancel and still get a refund.
Also, I'm just going to drop a phrase here, large fruit basket for the concierge.
Exactly, yeah. And last question is from Richard. He says, I'd love to hear some of the feedback you're getting on Genie Plus. My wife and family have spent the last few days at the parks, and this is our first time back since Genie Plus was adopted, and my wife got seriously angry about the whole thing on the way back from the hotel and said she never wanted to visit Disney again. We're Touring Plan subscribers and love to plan our trips. I know they'll tweak and change the system, but this is far less superior than the old, and I'm generally okay with the change. So I will say this, Jim, and I'm addressing Richard as well. If we look at the surveys that we get from Touring Plans users and from unofficial guide readers, I would say it's probably 4-1 against Genie that we're seeing in the comments. People really don't like two things about it. One, the fact that you've got to make a reservation at 7 o'clock in the morning while you're on vacation. They preferred being able to do it 60 days in advance on the trip so they could sleep in on vacation. And the second thing that just galls them, of course, is the price.
But we are only in the first 3 days now. And frankly, there's a number of people in parks and resorts who see the exact same levels you're talking about here, Len, the response from guests and that sort of thing. But the pushback from upper management is we really don't have enough data at this point.
Right.
We spent a lot of money on this. We've spent a lot of time developing this. I'm not going to make a decision about this with just 30 days worth of data. Right. So this will be adjusted. This will be tweaked. but we could, you know, it's at least 3 months, more like six.
Okay.
Before you're going to see that finessing, because they're going to want the really for real data.
Yeah,
and they're going to want February school vacation, April school vacation.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were hoping to get some stuff at Christmas, but with COVID.
That's exactly.
Yeah, I think crowds were definitely lower than we expected. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Jim finishes up the story about Disney's first attempt at a Marvel attraction, which is the Iron Man experience at Hong Kong Disneyland.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. All right, Jim, we left off. You were talking about the fact that Disney owns the Night at the Museum film series, which they acquired when they bought Fox. And that removed the roadblock for Jon Favreau to proceed with his Magic Kingdom project.
There's a reason that Jon Favreau, included Flushing Meadow in the 1964 World's Fair in Iron Man 2. Jon literally grew up across the street.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In fact, he was born in October of 66, and the fair had ended at that point. But he talked about, by making this movie, I got to revisit where I grew up, which was right across the street from Flushing Meadow Park. The whole Stark experience in Flushing Meadow, the old fairgrounds, I grew up looking out my window at the remains of the 64 World's Fair. And so this is the way to represent that in this story. It's a love letter to Queens, and Queens doesn't get a lot of love.
Queens does not get a lot of love, right.
Yeah, so you have to picture, if you rewatch this movie now and take in the moment where, for example, Tony Stark actually flies through the universe as he's making his entrance, you got to picture 10-year-old Jon Favreau looking out his bedroom window at that, and it's like, okay, you know, someday I'm going to do something with this. What you mentioned about the Magic Kingdom project that Jon's been trying to get going, what's been kind of interesting is a couple of folks have stepped forward since and explained that, well, you know, one of the reasons Disney didn't go forward with it as a movie was Jon really wanted to do, again, in fact, it's lovely, it's like, wow, you know, Jon Favreau takes notes from Len Testa. You know, he wanted it to be darker. He wanted it to have a sci-fi feel. And Disney was like, you know, we really just want that Night at the Museum money. Is that a bad thing? You
know, that's fantastic.
Something happy, something fun. And so what's absolutely fascinating about it is because Disney couldn't bring itself to turn the key as a movie. However, February of last year, it was announced that Ronald Moore, now Disney cut a deal with Ron
okay.
February of last year to do a whole bunch of projects that are tied to the Disney theme parks that are headed to Disney Plus, and among them is the Magic Kingdom. Because we don't have to go theatrical with this. We're not limited to 2 hours. And more to the point, we can go dark. Where he was talking about what excites him about where Disney is headed in the next couple of years.
Oh, he actually used the phrase metaverse, right?
He did. He did. And yeah, Chapek is very, very excited about the notion of creating these sorts of shows that are feature components of the parks that then allow guests to interact with them. What's particularly worth noting is that if you do the Muppet Haunted Mansion show that was just done, which did a marvelous job of recreating the interior and the exterior of that attraction, was all shot in the volume. You know, that's the notion now going forward. The Magic Kingdom project is finally viable because it's like, hell, we can shoot it. We don't even have to go into a park. You know, we can just shoot it on a soundstage.
No, I think that's fantastic. What did you think of that movie, by the way?
I thought they did a great job. I thought Kirk Thatcher, who both wrote and directed that, I just would really like it if Disney Plus would give him shots at making some other Muppet theme park attraction. So.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good. I'm sure the budget for this was relatively low, and it was like, we don't want to risk too much on the Muppets here. But for what likely the budget was, I thought it was a success. Was it, the best Muppet thing ever done? No. Was it solid? Would I watch it? Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd watch things like that. Yeah. So I mean, it's a good start.
Definitely. It's just the Muppets these days, especially in the age of Pixar and Marvel and Simpsons and all that. It's. It's not like it was in 89, when right. Eisner initially wanted to snag this IP, because it's like, oh, it's huge. It's like, really has to fight for the spotlight these days. Well, anyway, okay, to get back to the Iron Man experience now. So we were just talking about the Stark Expo scene from Iron Man 2 and the whole notion of, well, wait a minute, if we're going to do this for Hong Kong Disneyland, how do we explain that the Stark Expo that was so clearly in this movie from 2010 was, set in New York. What's it doing here in Hong Kong? And it was John Lasseter, the then head of Pixar Animation Studios and Walt Disney Animation Studios, more importantly, the creative consultant for Imagineering, who basically cleared the way. He was the one who said, look, this is Tony Stark. At this point, he's a tech giant. He would obviously be borrowing a page from Steve Jobs.
Yeah, he's like Steve Jobs with missiles, right?
There you go. Set your Apple Watch for Afghanistan.
That was great. I'm choking. Hold on 1 second. Keep going. Keep talking.
Okay. All right. But face it, at this point, China's seen as an emerging market for tech. Stark Industries would obviously want to be in the middle of that, which is why Tony, in order to stake a claim on this market, would stage a Stark Expo over there 1 year.
Sure.
Not only that, but to really make it obvious to Stark Industries rivals that it was in it to win it, Tony would build a brand new Stark Tower right in the middle of downtown Hong Kong and then put a huge new arc reactor on the top of that building. So it's like, to Lasseter's statement, just look, he's Steve Jobs. He'd make the big gesture. And more to the point, were people to quibble about, I'm walking into a theme park and the very thing you pointed out, to the effect of here's this tech company, Stark Industries, which from the movies, we've been told they're into missiles, they're into weaponry. It's like, what is that doing inside of a theme park? And the Imagineers, the answer they came up with was right from the company's history. And Ted Robillo, the creative lead on Iron Man, as the attraction over to Hong Kong, shared this. It's like, look, when Walt Disney built the first Tomorrowland, he had partners from American industry. Companies like Monsanto, McDonnell Douglas, RCA, used this opportunity to showcase a lot of their latest tech to the millions of people who were visiting Disneyland each year. If there's a Tony Stark, he comes up with some brand new tech that he wants to showcase, like in this case, the Iron Wing, wouldn't he do the same thing that Monsanto or McDonnell Douglas or RCA did back in the 50s and 60s? He'd cut a deal with Disney, sponsor an attraction in one of their parks, and engender a little goodwill, So at this point, it's like, okay, story problem solved. So now it's time to build this $100 million attraction, which, by the way, I'm sure Magic Kingdom fans will sympathize with this, but due to the site prep and the foundation work that needed to be done at the very edge of Tomorrowland to accommodate construction of the Iron Man Experience show building, Hong Kong Disneyland's railroad had to shut down from February 2014 through June of the following year. Weren't we hearing that the railroad might open this month?
Oh, in the Magic Kingdom? I think it's been shut down since 1865.
Oh, there we go.
It's been what, three years? 2019? 2018?
They drove the golden spike.
We
don't actually want to use this thing. So anyway, once the building's built, 5 motion-based simulators are installed inside of the structure. Ride Film, which is created by ILM. By the way, they took all of the experience that they'd acquired creating the multiple ride films for Star Tours, The Adventure Continues. Basically tried to make the Iron Man experience almost a best of experience, taking their favorite, whether it's moves of the simulator or staging of individual scenes, pulling them from Star Tours. In fact, I'm told that a lot of the stuff from the scenes set on the city planet of Coruscant, were used for the Hong Kong, flying through the, between the skyscrapers and the street battle, with, of course, Marvel Studios regularly consulting. Also worth noting here, The ride film recently got updated. When this attraction first opened in January 2017, Iron Man Experience definitely made you, made a point of, we are leaving from Hong Kong Disneyland and flying across the bay to the city of Hong Kong. So you literally did a flyby of that park's version of Sleeping Beauty Castle.
Oh, but then it changed.
It did. It did, which is, it became the Castle of Magical Dreams in September of 2020, in time for that park's 15th anniversary. And the Iron Man Experience ride film was changed at that time to reflect that change.
Wow. That's being on top of things. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah. But the thing that the Imagineers sweated the most, the whole thing of would guests accept at the Stark Expo, which again, Iron Man 2 from 2010, staged in Flushing Meadow, would they accept that it was, staged in Hong Kong, New Zealand? Guests never questioned it. Didn't care.
Isn't that funny?
Got on the ride, loved it. Which is why, when time came to expand Marvel Studios' presence at Hong Kong Disneyland in September of 2017, they just shut down Buzz Lightyear Astro Blaster, the show building that was located next door, and changed the exterior of that building. So it then became yet another building at the Stark Expo, the SHIELD Science and Technology Pavilion, which then reopened in March of 2019 as the home of Ant-Man and the Wasp Nanobattle, but that's an attraction we'll talk about another.
I love that it's Nano Battle because they can just open up an attraction and be like, oh, they're fighting. You just can't see it because they're so small. Exits this way. Please go through the gift shop. By the way, Jim, the Magic Kingdom Railroad closed on December 3rd, 2018. So it's 3 years and change. It'll be 3.5 years by the time it reopens.
What was it? February to June. So what is it? It's 16 months. So really twice the amount of time. But again, to be fair, we have to factor in the pandemic.
Yeah, sure. Fair. All right, folks, that's going to do it for the Disney Dish show today. Please head on over to disneydish.bandcamp.com, where you'll find exclusive shows never before heard on iTunes, including live shows Jim and I have recorded in all four Walt Disney World theme parks. On next week's show, Jim looks back at the history of Epcot's CommuniCorps, which closed on January 31st, 1994, to make way for Innoventions. You can find more of Jim at jimhillmedia.com and more of me, Len, at touringplans.com. We're produced fabulously by Aaron Adams, who will be playing cowbell on Junior Sisk's performance of the bluegrass album Flat and Scruggs at Carnegie Hall at the 20th annual Spring Bluegrass Festival on Saturday, March 12th at the Ozark Highlands Theater in beautiful downtown Mountain View, Arkansas. While Aaron's doing that, please go into iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.